At the end of today's webinar, I will post a link to an evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we very much appreciate your feedback. Also, during today's presentation, if you can use the chat box for any questions that you may have. Today is our second webinar in the middle school series. Next week, we'll focus on scheduling considerations and information and registration information about that webinar, as well as all other upcoming webinars is available on our webpage. Today's topic is assessment considerations when implementing RTI in the middle school. We're very pleased to have Dr. Evelyn Johnson back with us today. Dr. Johnson is a professor of special education at Boise State University and the executive director of the Lee Pesky Learning Center, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to improve the lives of people with learning disabilities. Dr. Johnson is a screening tool review committee member for the National Center for Response to Intervention and co-author of three books, all published by Corwin Press, Identification and Evaluation of Learning Disabilities, How RTI Works in Secondary Schools, and RTI, A Practitioner's Guide to Implementation. And today we welcome Dr. Evelyn Johnson back with us.
Thanks, Molly. Hi, everybody. As Molly said, this is the second in a series of five webinars, all focused on RTI in the middle school. And last week we started with just an overview of what RTI looks like at the middle school. We reviewed the research coming out of the National Center for Response to Intervention on their middle school evaluation study and talked about how some of the critical components of RTI might look different or be applied differently in the middle school. And this week we are talking about assessment considerations within the RTI process. So we're going to focus primarily on screening and progress monitoring. I didn't include outcome data because with an hour and 15 minutes, I think screening and progress monitoring are going to give us plenty to talk about. Okay. So from last week's webinar, we identified two purposes of a response to intervention model at the middle school level. And when we polled the participants, I actually am recognizing names already from last week, which is great. Lots of you said, you know, that you primarily use RTI as an intervention model, but then lots of you are also considering its use as a prevention model, where the goal is to identify as early as possible within the middle school experience or as early as possible in the relevant school year, which kids might be at risk for some really poor academic outcomes, such as being at increased risk for dropping out, being at risk for or presenting like what we call a late emergent learning disabled student, students who are English language learners in your school, and then, of course, identifying the intervention needs to ensure that you are providing ongoing support for struggling learners or temporary support for kids who really just need that additional reinforcement for skill mastery so that they can, you know, re-enter the core and be successful. So with those two purposes in mind, then what we need to make sure that we have in place within an RTI model is a really strong universal screening process. I focused most of the discussion today around academics. Of course, there are behavior screenings, and we'll look at a few, but I haven't made that the focus. I just wanted to let people know that. In a universal screening process, our purpose is to do that really quick sort of students into those two main categories, right? We want to just have as efficient a method as possible for saying, I believe that this student is at risk, and I am really certain that this student is not at risk, okay? So that quick sort, what that does for us is it helps us narrow down our pool of potential students that we're concerned about, which is really important, really under any setting, but especially once we get to the middle school setting where you know, schools are typically large. And so the reality of really being able to fully assess all of our students, it's just impossible, right? So screening is meant to flag our kids. It's meant to be that really brief sorting that then helps us narrow down the pool of students of concern so that we can follow up with slightly more in-depth diagnostic procedures. Okay? So in order to accomplish that, any screening process that we use, it needs to be brief, right? So it shouldn't be a lengthy process. It needs to be efficient, which, yes, it ties into being brief, but by efficient, it means it also needs to work well, and it needs to be something that's easy to implement. It needs to be accurate. So when we create those categories of possibly at risk and probably not at risk, we want that distinction to be as accurate as possible, right? Because most of all, we don't want to not catch students who are at risk. But in the world of limited resources, we also don't want to over-identify students as being at risk because we don't have unlimited intervention resources. So if we overcrowd or overpack our intervention resources, they actually become less effective for all students, right? Because our ratios become unwieldy. And then finally, they need to be informative. So in many secondary settings, we see schools using only prior year state assessment data. And while that's really helpful, it's not to know, you know, which students were successful at meeting grade level benchmarks and which weren't. It's not necessarily all that informative in terms of, okay, so now what do I do? So if we're going to implement a screening process successfully, this slide just provides a schematic of what that process should look like. And it's the best practice guidelines for screening are to implement it 3 times a year, although in recent years there's been some discussion and a lot of thought about, you know, maybe we only really need to screen in the fall and in the winter, because if we are screening at the end of the year, that doesn't give us any time to intervene, and then we have summer, and then we start the process in fall anyway. And so I've been to a couple things recently where people say, like, it's almost like a school ritual to collect this benchmark data in the spring, but it doesn't actually inform the process. And I thought about that, and I said, that, you know, it makes a lot of sense. Some schools that have stable populations, however, see the value in implementing screening procedures in the spring, right? Because that helps them better plan for the following year. So that's really a decision that I think would be driven by the school needs, that stability of the population, or at the district level, what the thought process there is on how helpful the collection of spring screening data might be in terms of informing interventions for the following year. So that's just something to consider as we're going through the webinar today. So what this screening process does is it just outlines, you know, the 4 main steps, right? So we want to screen all of our students. And the reason why we want to screen all of our students is, again, by secondary school, you know, we have this tendency to think we already know who's at risk and who's not. But the truth is that, you know, the middle school is a transition for lots and lots of kids. And so, and lots of things are happening, both internal to the student, in terms of changes to the environment, dynamics at home. So it's really best practice to administer screening instruments to the entire student population, even those that we really aren't worried about. And then step 2 is just a depiction depiction of that quick sort, right? Either I've met the benchmark, so you're not worried about me, I'm not at risk, or I haven't met the benchmark. And so here's one data point that suggests that I am at risk of poor academic outcomes. Then that's where a lot of schools stop, right? They stop after step two, and then they go immediately to intervention. Well, in the screening process that I've outlined here, we're going to carry the screening process out just a couple more steps. And the reason why we do that is because the additional time that we spend really honing in on our at-risk population and really getting a sense of, you know, the needs of my risk pool is going to help me better plan for intervention. So instead of doing what's called a direct route to intervention, right? So again, that's that stopping after step two and saying, okay, those of you who didn't meet benchmark, you go into Mrs. Johnson's class or literacy lab or intervention support. What can happen under that kind of a model is that for kids with more intense needs, they end up spending a lot of time in an intervention that's not designed or intense enough or well-suited to meet their needs. And so, yes, we've done screening, but without this additional examination and evaluation of our screening data, we can actually violate that informative principle of screening, right? So if we can carry it out just a couple more steps, we can determine the severity of the discrepancy, right? Because there's a difference between a little bit below benchmark and a lot below benchmark, okay? And so once we do that additional sort, for kids who are near benchmark, those might be the kids now that I put immediately into my tier two supports. So existing intervention programs that are designed to support needs in, let's say, strategic reading, for example, or in improving writing skills, or revisiting some foundational math concepts, for example. For kids who have a more moderate or significant discrepancy, then I might take some additional time to conduct more targeted assessments that would inform my intervention. And that's going to just help me determine the nature of my discrepancy to allow for that better match of intervention to student need. So these are some of the considerations that actually some of you presented at the end of last week's session when I said, you know, let me know what questions or comments you have, what things concern you about assessment in the RTI model. Lots of you mentioned, you know, we're testing kids already so much, like how do we really implement screening without adding yet another test? So we want to minimize the number of assessments. So we want to pick what we call high yield screening instruments. Those are instruments that are easy and brief to administer, but they are powerful in the information that they give us. Okay. We really want to take a look at both reading and writing tools. You know, most of the RTI implementation process really has its foundations, I guess, in reading. But with Common Core emphasis, we really want to make sure that we're identifying kids who need that additional support in writing. We also want to look at screening tools for math. At middle school, we also need our kids to perform well in the content areas. And so we'll take a look at some tools that are a little less widely used that can be implemented to help identify kids who maybe don't have strong content area mastery in science and social studies. And then we probably won't talk about logistics this time. Instead, next week when we talk about scheduling considerations, we will talk about all the, you know, how do you actually pull this off in addition to figuring out the logistics of intervention and providing that flexible schedule for our kids. So I wanted to start with a screening tool that has been around for a long time, actually. I'm going to share my screen. That has been around for several years now, that started as a high school tool. And I'm hoping that what you see right now is an Excel file that says Early Warning System Middle Grades Tool. And I can no longer see my chat. So Molly, if you don't mind just letting me know if that's actually what you can see on your end, I would really appreciate it. The early warning.
Dr. Johnson, we don't see an Excel, but we see Early Warning System Middle School Tool.
Okay. It's
like a whole narrative.
Okay, great. So the Early Warning System Tool, this is the middle grades tool, was developed by the National High School Center, which is part of the American Institute for Research. It is a downloadable Excel file from the website that I have included in the slides. And it was designed based on research that was conducted largely by the ACHIEVE group to identify what they called high yield predictors of later school dropout. And so what they did was conduct a couple of studies in large urban areas, so primarily Chicago, LA Unified, and Philadelphia. And through the collection of a massive amount of data on a number of different factors, which we'll take a look at here in a minute, they identified these different factors that when these factors were present in a child's record or a student's record, their risk of dropping out of school it increases exponentially. And when there are several of these factors present, the probability of them dropping out becomes, you know, near certain. And so the idea behind the early warning system is that through the collection of very routine data, so data that schools are already collecting, they developed this database that can be used to flag, you know, to offer this red flag for kids who present with those factors so that something can be done about it before the child becomes at risk of dropping out. So because we have a lot of tools we're going to look at, I don't want to go into a ton of depth on this or on how to use it, because there's actually really great directions for how the tool can be used, to include how a school that's already using a student database system can download and upload these different source files so that it can work in this tool, right? So you're not doing double entry. All of that information is included at the Better High School site, and it's I think it's very user-friendly. But I just wanted to give you an idea of what this looked like. So I went, I did go to the right one. The tool has different areas where you can set things up. So this tool setup is just a place for you to enter your school information. And then here you enter in, you know, whether how many days are in your quarter, right? Because one of the high yield indicators is the number of absences per quarter. And then you can, these tables are really just like database categories so that things will auto-populate on other worksheets for you. And then what you'll see over here, this risk indicator threshold, and maybe I'll zoom my screen a bit so you can see that better. So this area in gray, where it says indicator, some of the high yield indicators are in those first 20 days of a transition year. So the first year of middle school. So whether that's, some of you indicated that's fifth grade, for some it's sixth and some seventh at junior high. So the number, if a child misses more than 20% or 4 days within that first 20-day period, that's a high yield indicator that increases the likelihood that they'll drop out, right? Because if you think about it, what it signals is that there's a likelihood that being absent is due to the challenges of navigating that transition, right? If the student is absent in any one grading period or quarter more than 20%, that's actually a high yield indicator. And then obviously if we carry that over the year. So those three indicators, if you think about it, that's all that is attendance, right? And then our other high yield indicators are performance in those core area courses, so English and math. Okay? If you're using this as a school, you have the ability to customize these figures. They default to the options that have been demonstrated to be true in the research, but the early warning system is designed to have some flexibility because some of these indicators might not work depending on the school population. So for example, if you have a large migrant population, it's not, you know, these indicators might hold true. On the other hand, keeping them puts everybody at risk, you know, so those kinds of individual considerations based on your school and the population you serve. Okay. Oops. Sorry, there we go. So that's what you can do in our tool settings. If we look at student information, it probably looks like a lot of databases you're already using. So here you're just putting in student demographics. And then there's a really great area. I want to spend just a minute on this area. Sorry, when I blow it up, for some reason, I'm losing the worksheet. I'm going to try that one more time. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. There we go. I know this is small. I'm going to leave it at 100% for some reason when I blow it up, but I lose the detail here. On the student incoming risk status, what this helps us do is if you can see this column that says flag for incoming indicator of risk, that's where if I am inheriting a student from another school or another district who is coming in with data that indicates they're at risk, I have a column here where I can put that. The other thing that you can do here on the incoming data, you see all these other categories. If a school wants to customize this tool so that they can actually input state assessment performance or end of course performance, which some of the high schools, when we worked on this tool at high school, they were really interested in including that. And what it does here is just give you a way to capture all of that information all in one place. Okay. We can include specific exam data here, and again, you can put in whether it's state level assessment end of course or specific to an academic area. And then what is produced here, this is just the student information, right? So here you'll see a chart that's completed. So we have all of the information in, and these are, you know, made up names and made up data that we're looking at. Okay. And then what it produces is a spreadsheet that lets us know about student risk status. So if we just go down and because it's Excel, you can end up sorting it. I'm not going to walk us through that because I'm worried with technology we'll have some weird time lapse. But what you can walk through here is, let's take a look at our first guy here, Charlie Lukes. He had a flag for incoming data. He also had is flagged because of performance on his state exam. He's flagged for 20-day attendance, not for the quarter, not for failing courses, but he also has a flag for behavior. And this field is undefined by the tool, but schools can indicate how they're going to define flagging for behavior. So schools that use a positive behavior support model often use an office discipline referral as their indication. And when kids go over a certain amount, and that varies again by a school, then they input that information, and that's where that flag for behavior comes. And what it allows you to do is look at both the student level to see what exactly they're, you know, why they're flagged as a student of concern. And it also allows you, you know, through sorting to see, you know, where your highest indicators are. So, for example, in a high school that I worked in, it was located in a university town in North Idaho, and they actually didn't have that many kids who were at risk for dropping out. But through this process, they ended up discovering that they had this huge attendance issue. So kids were like missing tons and tons of school, and they were still passing their classes, right? So it kind of served a slightly different purpose, but what that evaluation of data led to was them developing an intervention in terms of tightening up that attendance policy, but then also making sure that they had opportunities for more challenging coursework. So they actually needed less intervention and more challenging, rigorous coursework that was engaging and motivating to the students. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and switch back to our presentation. I think I do stop sharing. Okay, so Jill, if you go, so Jill's asking where, I'm wondering where would you receive this spreadsheet? So if you actually go to this website on that's showing on the slide right now, there is a place where you download. You do have to register. It's a free download, but they do ask you to input your information and what school you're from and why you're going to use the tool. And then you can download. And there's two downloads. One is actually already populated. That's the demo version I just showed you. And then there's a blank version for you to use with your school. Okay. So I like to start with the early warning system because if your school is currently using nothing else, that's a great way to get started. Again, it's we're using high yield indicators on academic, you know, there's attendance isn't a perfect measure of motivation and engagement, but it is a strong corollary, so it gives you some information there. And then there's the capacity to create a behavior flag. And again, what it does so nicely is it provides that quick sort. It means we're not collecting any additional data than what we're already collecting from our students. And it also has some flexibility so that we could input additional benchmark data as part of the early warning system and create an additional flag. It gives the capacity to look at the individual student level, so, you know, what does Charlie need, but then it also allows me to look collectively across grades to see where I might have some specific issues. Okay. So we're going to now transition somewhat to look at more specific screening tools for reading, some for writing, and some for math. So the recommendation for adolescent screening is to use both the state assessment performance from the spring and then in the fall to follow up with a screening tool. There's been a number of studies that have indicated, including one that I did with in Georgia, and then in Florida, looking at how much accuracy is improved when we combine that state assessment data and we use not only whether they were below whatever their proficiency level is, but if we actually bump that up to include that standard error of measure, right? So there's, you know, there's a range, you know, the kids get a score and then there's the standard error of measurement that if we add plus or minus however many points, in Idaho it's 7. If we add that to either side of our test score, that gives us a range. And what that allows us to do is catch the kids who are just, you know, they just barely eked over that proficient line. And it could have gone either way, you know, with the standard error of measurement, they could have just as easily been on the left side of that cut point. So that double system really helps. It also helps for that summer learning loss, and obviously for kids who we didn't have last year, we might not have screening or state performance data, and so we need to catch them in the fall. So Lisa is saying any academic intervention has to begin by November 1st. So fall, yeah. So in your case, Lisa, that would be a great example of when you might do the spring as a way to forecast who, you know, what your intervention groups are going to look like, what those needs are. And then if you have new kids who aren't assessed, then a fall. I would still do the fall benchmark, to be honest with you, because you might, you know, and then do a reconcile, right? Like, so have your interventions front-loaded to start in the fall, but then that fall benchmark might help you refine some of those decisions. And if you can do that at smaller numbers, that might keep the process more manageable. Okay, so when we talk about screening, whenever I do this presentation, everyone wants to know, what do you think of this tool? What do you think of that tool? And I think that's a perfectly valid question to ask. I don't know how helpful my answer is, because most screening tools really should be made, you know, they should be made at either the school or the district, ideally district level, so that there's some similarity across schools in terms of what's used, so that you can all talk a common language, and to help facilitate that transition from elementary to middle and then middle to high school. And so what I've done here, you may be familiar with these resources. I'm going to link to that first. Well, I'm going to go here first. Molly, I think I have to do screen sharing, right, when I do the hyperlink to the website. Sorry, I got ahead of myself. Yep, sorry. I'm going to share my screen so you can see what I'm looking at. Okay, so the Center on Response to Intervention published the screening tools chart. The center is no longer active, although I'm a member of the Screening Technical Review Committee, and we continue to get vendor submissions. And the idea behind this tool chart is that the National Center has provided this like consumer reports type approach to providing information about various screening tools. And so I just did a quick sort by grade and by subject. And again, you know, I don't want to, I'm sure lots of you are familiar with this. It's been in existence for multiple years now. I think almost 8 or 9 years now. But new additions are made. So like this ClassWorks Universal Screener is relatively new. The Formative Assessment System, or FAST, which was just recently developed at the University of Minnesota, is new. But the way this chart works I'll pull up star because somebody asked me last week about star. If you click on the name of the tool, it gives you a summary of the data that is presented on that chart, but then it also gives you some additional information here in terms of the cost, the technology, the company, what the purpose is, what the administration looks like, and the length of time that it takes, right? So those are all very important considerations. You know, obviously lots of our decisions are made by, you know, based on funding. Can we actually afford this? So you get a sense there. You also get a sense on how accurate the tool is. So how good of a job does this tool do in terms of sorting people and into that risk and no and not at risk? And you'll see that the tools that have that full circle, just like our consumer reports when we're, you know, in the market for a refrigerator, gives us a sense of the psychometric properties of our instrument. Okay? So that's another way that we can go ahead and make some informed decisions about our screening instruments. The National Center on RTI is now in its most recent iteration, the National Center on Intensive Intervention, right? The idea is to provide these resources for the various tiers within the RTI model. And so at the intensive intervention site, there are no screening isn't included because the intervention site is really geared more for tier two and tier three. But a lot of the progress monitoring tools have benchmarks, right? So they serve multiple purposes. They're both screening benchmark tools, and then within the same system, there are additional tools that we can use for progress monitoring. And here you'll see that same approach to giving the user helpful information about how to evaluate and make decisions about what tool to use. Okay, and I'm going back to the PowerPoint. Okay, so those are resources that we can use to find good tools. And then what's been a very recent development is that there's a lot more computerized programs, right? Most of our reading tools consist of either Maze or reading CBM, so our oral reading fluency at middle school, right? And Maze is often recommended as the screening tool because you can do it in a group setting. And it's really quick to administer. It's very easy to score. It's not a great, it does an okay job at sorting kids into risk and not at risk. But by itself, you know, based on results from Maze itself, it should not be used as the determination for intervention, right? There needs to be some follow up, some triangulation of data when we use those 1 minute screening tools. And so in order to address some of those concerns, there's a lot more computerized programs coming out that are attempting to address the broader construct of reading, but still keep the process efficient and manageable. So I put a few of the examples of some of the larger ones up there. So STAR is one. iReady is an assessment system that's Common Core aligned, and then iSIP Advanced Reading or iStation is another computer-based assessment tool. What all of these programs have in common is they'll have a benchmark, and then they'll have progress monitoring tools, and then they also you can also elect to purchase the full intervention product. So based on the student's results, then they'll be placed in, you know, the appropriate intervention or instructional lesson. There's not, all of these things are so new, there's not a lot of helpful empirical data to make a decision about whether they're worth the investment, right? So the efficacy of these programs right now is limited to in-house program evaluation. And so that's not necessarily the most objective form of evidence. So it's really hard to make a recommendation just yet, because the research on these programs, looking at outcomes, comparing them to other methods, just isn't there yet. We have found in our work with a medium-sized for us school district in Idaho that they moved to the use of STAR. And when we were working with them on a data board system, they found that when they had performance on STAR, performance on a maze, and performance on a oral reading fluency measure, that the maze was really the most consistent, right? We helped them do a backwards analysis of their data. The maze was the one that was most highly predictive of kids who later didn't perform well on their reading assessment. And the STAR, we're not sure why, and again, this is limited to one instance that we've had in Idaho. The student performance seemed to be like really inconsistent. And so the school reported that they felt like they were moving kids all the time, and that so much was dependent on, you know, whatever happened that day. So they think it's because of the novelty of the computer system for the kids, but it's been really unclear. So we're continuing to work on it because the district's invested in the program. So we're continuing to work on ways to help them improve that. When we talk about reading in secondary school, we're not just talking about, you know, screening for like basic reading problems, but we also want to know about reading in the content areas. And so some of the ways that we can do that are to create maze passages in the content areas. And listed up here is a citation for an article, and I'm happy to send it to Molly. I know I probably shouldn't, but I can send it to Molly. And so if you're interested, there are directions on how to create a maze passage, right? Essentially, you leave the first sentence intact, and then you delete every seventh word and replace it with three like choices. So I know there are web-based programs that will automatically create mazes for you. They actually violate some of the principles. So they do a good job on, you know, that, you know, apply the algorithm and I'll delete the seventh word and then I'll give you the three choices. But some other considerations to make more highly reliable mazes are to ensure that the word choices, the three word choices, don't vary by more than two letters, that they are all of the same word type, so verbs, et cetera. Obviously, you don't want to delete a proper noun because then what is the right replacement choice, right? So there are some more specific directions. And so what we did, I did a study a couple years ago in Science, and we have a publication, and I'm happy to share that one with all of you as well. But we use the computer system to just generate so that we could scan the passages in and then have it generate for us, saving us some of that grunt work. But then we went back through and we adapted it based on the directions that from Chris Espen and Ann Fagan that were provided in their article. The other way that we can screen for reading in the content areas is through vocabulary matching. And when we get into progress monitoring, I have a couple of resources there that demonstrate how to create those kinds of vocabulary matching tools. Another area that we want to be able to screen for is in writing. And so last week, someone asked, you know, someone made the comment that using correct word sequences, yes, it's the most reliable, but and it's the most when we compare different ways of scoring writing CBMs, it falls out as the most predictive. However, getting teachers to actually score that way correctly either takes an intense amount of training and then constant calibration, because it's a perishable skill, right? It's a very cumbersome way to score. And so with that question, it had actually been a number of years since I looked very closely at writing CBMs. In our state, we don't have a performance written assessment anymore. We will this coming year, but we haven't had one. And so most schools were not interested in writing CBMs. So when I went back to really refresh my memory on, like, I knew I had read that total words written was a pretty good proxy measure. And that continues to be true. In the early grades, total words written gets as nearly as high a predictive validity as using correct writing sequences. In the upper grades, it's the discrepancy between those two gets a little bit bigger. And so in the articles that I found, and that's that second link here, this progressmonitoring.net, their technical report, it's number 8, I think, and that link will take you right there, indicated that the most reliable and valid scoring procedure was to use correct sequences minus incorrect sequences for over a 5 to 7 minute writing prompt. Okay. It's still really unclear how much better that is than total words written. And what I mean by that is that under research conditions, it's evident, right, that this correct written sequence minus incorrect is the most reliable. However, those are people who have developed these procedures and have a highly trained group of research assistants who do nothing but think about writing progress monitoring tools. And so they, under those conditions, yes, it's a lot better. If we think about actual implementation and can we get teachers at middle school who are doing lots and lots of other things, who aren't, you know, they're not just worried about writing CBMs, but they're worried about everything else that happens in a middle school. Could we really get them to that same level of accuracy and inter-rater reliability on those measures? And if not, then what does that do to compromise the reliability of total words written? That's how we have thought about it and tried to investigate it here. And what we found is that simply getting started with total words written, I wouldn't go from that to assigning a child into a writing intervention. However, it works really well, and it's a great way to get started on simply collecting that data to inform your writing program. And then over time, as you implement further, you can start to refine those scoring procedures. And that we're actually in that process now with a high school that we're working in. We're just getting started by administering the benchmarks, doing total words written. We're going to make decisions based on that, along with an additional common writing assessment, and create our groups from there. Okay. Just like reading, there are more and more computer-based writing measures. I don't know a lot about the writing roadmap by CT. It's published by CTB McGraw-Hill. If you put that into Google, it will take you right to their website. I haven't used it. I don't have experience with it. It looks very interesting to me. Uses artificial intelligence to provide feedback and scoring on student-generated essays. I have done a study at the college level using this Glencoe essay grader, and it's another way, it comes sort of front-loaded with criteria and I want to say canned feedback for students. So it certainly takes the reading load off of the teacher or instructor, It does provide some helpful feedback. It doesn't do a score like our writing CBMs do, and instead it gives more of a holistic score. And so, again, in my opinion, well, there's not enough, well, they're not developed as screening tools, so there's not evidence to determine whether they're, you know, how do you make decision rules, how do you make cut scores that define who's at risk and who's not at risk. However, they do produce scores that, you know, if you came to consensus about where those cut points should be, they could ease the burden of that administrative and scoring time that handwritten or even, you know, word processed writing CBMs would create. When we look at screening for math, it's similar to the reading process, right? The recommendations are that we use state level scores and follow up with a universal screening tool. I put up some of the more common ones. Easy CBM was developed to align with the NCTM math standards and the Common Core standards, and they have benchmark tools that screen across different math content areas, and then they break it down into things like algebra, geometry, fractions. So you also have the ability to, screen for individual skills. AIMSWeb has its math concepts and applications, and I don't have it on here. We'll look at this later under progress monitoring. The FAST tools for math are actually a lot like the AIMSWeb concepts and application. We'll look a little more closely at that here in a minute. And then finally, there's Project AIMS, which looks at basic algebra tools, and that's at Iowa State University, and that work is led by Ann Fagan and her colleagues there. And their basic algebra probe, we did some validation studies for them with both a junior high and a high school out here, and we found that the basic algebra probe of AIMS was very predictive of performance on at least our state assessment. Like reading, math has those same computer-based options. They're from the same company, and they work under those same principles, right? They do a much broader sampling of different math constructs and then provide, in some ways, a more comprehensive student profile along with immediate feedback about what to do based on the student performance. These are, again, this is my earlier comment about a school or district level decision. If a district invests in one of these computer-based options, then it's certainly worth exploring them and figuring out how to use them in the best possible way. And I spent some time on iReady after last week's session. We worked with STAR. I don't personally work with the iStation. A colleague of mine in Houston has worked with the iStation measures that were developed in Texas, and they're very similar. These three computer options are all very similar to each other. They, instead of just doing the 1 minute time, they have passages for reading. They have passages with comprehension. For math, they do a much broader sampling of the curriculum so that there's some fractions or some, you know, multi-digit operations, and then there's decimals and geometry. So for math, they tend to be a lot more comprehensive than the other CBMs that are out there. Okay. So we're revisiting the screening process. So once we've gone through now and identified who's at risk and who's not at risk, we want to take a look here at step four, the targeted assessments that will help inform our intervention. Okay. So some of the ways that we can do that are through the use of data boards. And so in the elementary schools that we work with, those tend to actually be like paper on the wall data boards with sticky notes of green, yellow, and pink to indicate the level of risk that teachers can physically move from one place to the other. When we work with middle schools, they tend to want to move away from that system, mostly because of size. And so one way we can do that is to use the early warning system, that incoming data, those other categories. We can input an other category and indicate our universal benchmark scores there and have that that cell red flag a child. That's one way we can create a computerized data board. The other way we can do it is through the use of CBM Focus. And Molly, I need to share my screen again. Thanks. And so CBM Focus is, again, it's another Excel sheet that was developed by Devin Healy in Utah. And so the website is cbmfocus.com, I think, or .org, sorry. And what Devin did, I don't know him personally, but I'd love to meet him and thank him for spending all of the time that he did with Excel to create this amazing tool. But what CBM Focus does is it has reading, math, and writing tools. And so it has an area where we can input student information. We can put their diagnostics. We can put their progress monitoring data. And then in terms of creating a data board for us, what this screen shows, this is our reading benchmark graph by class. And so we've actually used this program pretty extensively when we do our work in secondary schools, because it's really elegantly designed, and then this chart is automatically generated for us. So in this case, we were working with an already at-risk group, but if you did this class-wide or school-wide, you would see a benchmark graph that had some broader range into those green, yellow, and red areas, right? So it creates that for you so that you can really easily identify which kids are at risk. And then the orange is for fall. When we move into spring or winter, I'm sorry, for blue, we get that data, and then we see that it graphs it next to each other, so we can actually see changes in student performance. And again, this is all automatically generated just based on the data that we input. So these nice visuals help us monitor at the student level, and now you see we've got it at the classroom level, and we can put in multiple teachers. I don't think I have multiple teachers in here. We can put in multiple teachers so that if I wanted to do it across grade levels, I could do that. Okay. I'm going to stop sharing. Okay. And again, the goal in reviewing our screening data in that way is to help identify which students need more targeted assessment. So those data boards really give us that quick visual and that sorting capacity so we can figure out what students we're going to hone in on. And then the idea is that we have now created a much smaller risk pool that follow-up assessment should be a lot, in theory, it should be a much more manageable process than if we were to try and get that level of information with all of our students. So some of the diagnostics that we want to collect from our students in reading is we want to make sure that our kids actually have strong word identification skills, strong vocabulary, fluency, listening comprehension, and inferencing or I can put that in the more general comprehension model, but the inferencing task is actually a really strong proxy for background knowledge and then that ability to make connections. So a lot of that diagnostic information can actually be collected by somebody who has a background in reading and can either do a more in-depth look at the reading CBN, like an oral reading fluency. We can get a lot of information about the nature of a child's difficulty with reading through that analysis of the types of errors that they end up making, right? There are also within intervention tools, so for word identification, for example, the rewards program is one that has built in assessments. We can also use things like the TOWR, the Test of Word Reading Efficiency, that are, again, they're very quick diagnostic tools, but they just give us that additional information about the nature of the child's struggling with reading. For listening comprehension, in the studies that have been reported for getting better information about adolescent reading performance, they typically use they actually read a passage to the student and ask comprehension questions. So it's instead of the student reading it, it's read aloud to them. Okay, and then once again, computer options tend to provide what they call more diagnostic information. I think it. You know, my opinion in looking at the kinds of reports that are provided in STAR, iReady, and iStation are that, I don't know, on the surface, it looks helpful. To me, because you're not sitting there with the child, there's not the opportunity to sit and listen to them read. It's an incredibly useful report. There's still nothing that compares with that sitting down and having a child read a passage aloud, whether you take off the timing consideration or not. In fact, sometimes it's, you know, you do it timed to get the fluency information, but then also have an untimed measure. And to me, you can get much richer information about student reading in that way. However, you know, not all schools have either the people with the expertise to do that, especially at middle school, or the time, simply because of the high student numbers. And so in those cases, then the computer options at least provide, you know, a further breakdown. So you're not just getting a screening score, you're also getting some more helpful breakdowns about where the child is struggling. In writing, oh gosh, I've come up on an hour already. I was worried that I wasn't going to have enough time, and I think that's going to be true here. In writing, we want to look at the same kind of thing, right? There are these areas in writing that are really helpful in terms of informing the types of interventions that are needed. So we want to take a look at student writing samples and do some analysis on is the issue spelling, is it conventions, is it grammar, is it organization, word choice. And the way we've worked with schools, I haven't worked with a middle school yet on the writing. We've worked with some upper elementary grade levels. And what we've done is just simply create like a tally almost of, you know, next to the student performance, so that at the end of that diagnostic process at the student level, they can go back and collectively look at, okay, I have, you know, let's say word choice is my number one, is the area that most of these kids are struggling with. Then if I have to make some decisions about resources and intervention time, then I'm responding to my data by saying, well, most of my kids are struggling because their vocabulary is not well developed, so let's make sure that we focus on an intervention that will help strengthen and build their vocabulary. Okay. And math, the same thing. We want to break down. I mean, you guys get the process by now, right? We want to take the larger construct and break it down into these component elements. Just like the early warning system provides those high yield indicators of risk factors, each of these three constructs has those main components. You know, the big five in reading, and then the five areas in writing. These areas in math that if a child struggles with any one of them is going to cause them problems in the larger construct, okay? And so just like the writing model we just talked about, if we can collect our diagnostic information in a way that helps us identify where the breakdown in understanding is, and then in terms of numbers, where are most kids struggling? It helps inform my intervention. It might also help inform my larger math instruction. So for example, if I have lots of kids who come in and their knowledge of fractions is really low, that might give me reason to go talk to my feeder elementary schools and find out how that's being taught, right? So you can address it both in the immediate term. I'm going to focus my intervention on developing stronger understanding of fractions for these kids. But in the larger sense, I'm also now going to go and find out if there isn't some larger systemic issue within the curriculum. Once we have decisions made about intervention and how we're going to serve kids, then we want to progress monitor our kids. We're going to keep the progress monitoring discussion focused at the tier two level for today. And in my mind, the purpose at tier two of progress monitoring is really to determine whether students are benefiting from intervention and whether they're back on, you know, getting themselves back on track to meet grade level goals, or, you know, whether they're on track to do well in the core program. So ideally in an assessment system, and I mentioned this at the beginning, but the same tools that we're using for screening then also have the ability to serve as progress monitoring tools with the additional PM measures, right? And that what that does is just help reduce the number of different types of assessments you have to train your staff to use, so that you're, you know, removing just one more set of things that that teachers have to learn and manage. Okay. Just like our characteristics of effective screening tools, there are features of progress monitoring tools and progress monitoring in general that make it effective in the RTI system. We want to monitor across all tiers of intervention, and we want to make sure that our measures are related to content area, curriculum, grade, and tier level. We want our assessments to be easy and efficient, and then we want to have that capacity to present that visual display of information so that it facilitates our decision making. Okay. So the main questions that we're trying to answer with progress monitoring is, you know, are most students at my classroom level, if I'm progress monitoring in tier one, making acceptable progress? And that same is true at tier two, except that's at the intervention level. And then at tier three, my question really is the individual student responding to instruction or intervention? We look at individual data at tier two, as well. We look at individual student and small group data. Okay, so when we progress monitor at tier one, we could use things like common assessments in the content areas. We could use a vocabulary matching task for content areas, or we could use our performance benchmarks on reading, writing, and math. And so we often use our benchmark tools, so it's benchmarking versus progress monitoring. Our progress monitoring might occur really only once during each marking period, right? Because we don't need to do that more frequent progress monitoring. So one tool that I've seen a lot of middle schools use is this common assessment, and most often it's around a writing task, and is where it starts, and then in the content areas, then they sometimes follow with common assessments in the content areas. And while it's difficult to talk about any one specific common assessment, in general, their use and implementation across a school has helped to serve as a really strong predictor of later student performance. And there's a really good presentation on how to develop the common assessments and then how to collect the data and analyze it in a way to inform your decision rules about these common assessment tools at the link that's here at the bottom. Okay. Another way that we've seen schools monitor progress in the content areas is through the use of vocabulary matching. And there is research to support it. There are, I was hoping that by now there would be some actual published vocabulary matching tools, and I haven't found any yet. So there are directions for how to develop vocabulary matching tests at the progressmonitoring.net. That's the same resource I showed you for the writing information. That's the Research Institute on Progress Monitoring that began at the University of Minnesota. And then I found this really great tutorial. I think it was developed by Rhode Island District on how to create those measures. So someone took the literature from the Research Institute and created a series of videos and step-by-step directions on a really nice website. That's a sophia.org tutorial on how to create vocabulary matching progress monitoring measures. When we progress monitor at Tier 2, we generally move away from that progress monitoring of like content area, and we really look more at the progress monitoring of specific skills. And we're trying to determine, in addition to whether the student is making growth in the specific academic skill, whether that growth in that skill then also transfers to performance, literacy development in the content areas. And so some of the tools that we can use for that, again, are found on that intensive intervention tool chart that we've looked at. And then, yeah, I see Molly's anticipating me wanting to share. Can I go ahead and share? I'm going to show that fast for teachers. Okay. Let me close some of these that I have. So the FAST measures were developed by Ted Christ at University of Minnesota. And they, I mentioned earlier, they're a lot like AIMSWeb. And so with the exception that he has reading, math, he also has behavior measures, and the actual input of data and scoring and then visual display process is a lot, in my opinion, more sophisticated than AIMSWeb. But if you take a closer look at these measures, you'll see a lot of commonalities between the two. So if you're familiar with AIMSWeb, just know that a lot of the same types of progress monitoring tasks are used within the FAST system. Again, the advantage of the FAST, I think, is they've done a much better job on making the user interface component much more teacher and user friendly. So their CBM reading measures, for example, right, we probably recognize this as an oral reading fluency passage. They do go from K through 12. And then in math, they use a measure that looks a lot like concepts and applications from AIMSWeb. And then they also have a behavior monitoring tool that all I can tell you right now is that it exists. I'm not familiar enough with it to say much more about its use and efficacy. I'm going to stop sharing. I'm being mindful of time. I'm sorry. okay. In math, I have the same kinds of resources listed here. The Algebra Progress Monitoring, I don't have a website right now. It's under construction because Anne recently received additional funding to develop some training, online training modules for teachers. And so it's coming, but it's not yet available. So I'm sorry I don't have a link, but I did want to make you aware that these tools do exist so that you can maybe put a note in your calendar to check back to look for them. And then in terms of tools for analyzing progress monitoring data, that CBM focus tool that I showed earlier in screening, I'm not going to go through the screen sharing process now since we're coming up on the end of our time here, but it also allows you to put in progress monitoring data and then really creates these very simple but elegant progress monitoring charts that carry over through the year that are very simple to use. We've used them with a number of high schools that we've worked with in Idaho that are implementing RTI processes, and it's been the one tool that, again, in terms of that user friendliness and that really easy to analyze visual display, CBM focus, and it's free, so like it's really hard to beat it as a progress monitoring. It's a data collection system, right? You still need access to the tools for progress monitoring, but it helps you organize and analyze your data. Okay. So these are just some of the challenges. I'm sure I've overlooked several hundred other challenges in terms of implementing progress monitoring and student assessment systems. We will address we'll look at some potential solutions, shall I say, next week in terms of scheduling and managing the logistics and the infrastructure needed to carry out both a screening and a progress monitoring system effectively. So if you don't mind staying on just one additional minute, and again, in that chat box, if you have questions or concerns, here I put for next time, but if you have questions about the information that I just covered, if you could enter those in chat now, and then what Molly did last time was just send me the transcript, which let me be able to make sure that I address the questions that came up. And if you have questions about something I covered today, if you send that if you put it in the transcript now or email it to Molly, then I can maybe do a quick written response or take just like a minute, you know, a couple minutes next time to respond to those questions. And while you're all busy typing away and thinking about what your questions are, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to work with all of you again this week, and I am looking forward to next week. Okay, so Joshua is asking about a support center, especially for non-reading ELA or math, versus a direct service model of academic intervention. Well, I'll go ahead and respond to that question while other people are posting things for next week. We actually have worked in both systems, and so I don't know. I've worked with schools that have done both, and some schools, in some schools that have done both. And ultimately, like so many things in education, what it comes down to is not necessarily the model, but the quality of the intervention that ensues. So
you know, I've seen push in services that are incredibly effective when that teaming between the teachers is strong, when the support teacher is really providing support geared to accessing the general instruction and not just conducting intervention in the back of a classroom, if that makes sense. And then I've seen pullout be highly effective for, especially at middle school, you know, where we start having those concerns about, you know, how, what are my peers thinking about me and those kinds of questions, right? So they can come to a small group intervention where they get that more individualized or at least smaller group experience and support on things that they need. So it really, you know, it's really about what is going to best work in your school, and then whatever model you choose, making sure that the focus is on both remediating the academic skill area in a deficit. So like reading is the easiest example to work on or to talk about, I guess. But they're getting that intervention to improve their reading skills, but then they're also using strategies and being provided with accommodations in the general classroom that allow them to build that vocabulary and that content area understanding. It's really hard to do that in for kids who really need both, really hard to do it effectively in a push-in model. However, push-in, if you have a number of kids who are like, they're doing okay, but they need additional help, that's the population that those models tend to serve better, if that makes sense. Okay, so we're way over time now, so I see a number of questions, other questions have come up, and as long as this works for everybody, Molly will send me the transcript, and I can send an email response to Molly so you don't have to wait a full week, and for those that are related to scheduling, I'll make sure that that our time next week addresses some of the concerns and questions that you brought up here today. So thank you.